just like you. We feature progressive voices rarely heard in the media, such as Angela Davis, Arun Gupta, Richard Wolff, Ralph Nader, Naomi Klein, and Bill McKibben. To access our complete audio and book catalog, just go to our website, alternativeradio.org. Again, our website where we are podcasting, alternativeradio.org. To place a credit card order for CDs, MP3s, or written transcripts of today's program, Gary Taubes, Sugar, How Sweet It Isn't, call us at 1-800-444-1977. Again, that number is 1-800-444-1977. Or you can order on our website, alternativeradio.org. Ed Mays recorded the program. Joe Ritchie is our general manager and editor. I'm David Barsamian. Thank you for listening.
Good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next is Air Cascadia. Cascadia. Today is Tuesday, February 28th, 2017, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio, your sanctuary radio, your Antifa Fabulous radio at 90.7 FM, on the air, KBOO.FM, everywhere. Weather today, a little bit of weather first to get things rolling. Today we expect shattered showers. Well, I'm expecting shattered showers. I don't know about you. National Weather Service is more on the side of scattered showers. Overcast skies and a high around 47. Light winds, and tonight it's 50-50 regarding rain. And we should see lows around 42 and a little bit breezy, not much, but chances of rain pretty good. That's it for weather. And now let's move straight on to our guests for today. Ed Fallon is joining us from the Fallon Forum in out of Iowa. And we haven't heard from Ed in a little while, but he's definitely one of our familiar voices and one of the regulars on Air Cascadia. We also will be speaking with Lindsay Koshkari in a bit later on. Lindsay has a piece recently on Trump's extraordinary military budget. We do have a couple headlines. I think I am going to let those pass for now because we've got such terrific guests today. Just to introduce Ed Fallon, what we're talking about is that Tom Perez is the chair of the Democratic National Committee. I don't know how many people saw that coming, but I know that perhaps Ed was probably saw it but didn't like it. Good morning, Ed. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Good morning. Yeah, we, I think a lot of people knew it was going to be really, really close between Perez and Ellison, and I think we knew it was too close to call. And there were a lot of surprises. I mean, one surprise was in Iowa. We have five voting delegates from Iowa, and we elected two of them recently. A brand new chair, brand new vice chair, who both seemed to be getting the fact that the party needed a new direction. And then for them to suddenly go along with the status quo candidate was very shocking and very disappointing.
And insulting, too. Yeah. I mean, really, yeah. If you get down to it.
Yeah, so we're kind of, okay, scratching our heads over that and going to move on. I mean, I'd met with both those people, well, just a few weeks ago, and I was sure one of them was going to go with Ellison. The other one hadn't really decided yet, so it was kind of a shock, and I don't know why. I don't know why, but it's not good because, you know, the argument is that Perez isn't that bad. He's got a strong record as Obama's labor secretary. He's the first Latino to be elected to head the party. And he's reasonably progressive. That's not the point. The point is that we had a progressive candidate running who was promising to shake things up. I don't think Perez is going to shake things up. I think he's going to, you know, continue to make sure the status quo gets its way. And Ellison was probably not going to do that. And so he was unacceptable to the status quo.
How much Ellison apparently will be working closely with Perez? What do you make of that? Will that influence things at all?
It was a great political move by the establishment. They're very clever. You know, they really know what they're doing. They see the writing on the wall. The age of the so-called New Democrat, you know, launched by Bill Clinton and other very corporate-friendly Democrats back in the 80s, is coming to a close because it is now becoming more and more clear that it is a dismal failure, both in terms of politics, in terms of elections, and in terms of policy. And so they see the writing on the wall, but they're clinging to power by their fingernails for as long as they can. And, you know, whatever we can do to help them understand that, no, you just need to let go of the cliff, take the plunge, we'll take it from here.
You write that the Republicans, led by Donald Trump, will be doing a happy dance over this. How exactly? Why does this make the Republicans? Is it simply that they're so flat out wrong and it produced failure last time, and so they're? What do you figure that? How does this play into their game plan?
They know that the Democratic Party is in disarray, a disaster politically, ineffective policy-wise. And so for them, you know, obviously for the Democratic Party to make a difference, to actually become relevant again, they have to change. And so, yeah, this is going to make the Republicans quite happy. You know, they're not, you know, Democrats are not going to adopt the changes needed to move forward. So, you know, typically 2018, typically an off-year election is bad for the party who's got the presidency. So typically, historically, 2018 should be a good year for Democrats. Well, yeah. You know, I mean, it's too early to tell. Maybe something will change and it will be a good year for Democrats. But it's not enough to have Donald Trump and the U.S. Congress and state legislatures across the country doing horrible things. You have to have a viable party that connects with people in order to accomplish change. And right now, the Democrats have took a step in the wrong direction. We'll see. There's still plenty of time for the reform element of the party to take hold and accomplish the things that are needed. We'll see. But right now, I think Donald Trump and Paul Ryan and others are pretty darn happy.
Thank you so much for that, Ed. That it clarifies a lot, and we'll see going forward. I'm not going to ask you to make any prognostications on what the grand plan for the Democrats is going to be about. Just thank you so much. Ed Fallon with Bold Iowa will be in touch with Ed over the coming weeks and talk more about this. We're going to go next so much. We always love to have you on the show. We're going to go now to Lindsay Kashkarian. Lindsay Kashkarian, who we want to talk a little bit because it's, hey, you know, War is America's national pastime. It's almost as slow as baseball, but more bloodshed. Good morning, Lindsay. Thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
So the New York Times claimed recently, and Democrats, still on the same page. We're looking at Donald Trump's sudden announcement that he's going to increase the military spending by a good bit, after running his campaign, saying that we're not going to be engaging in these types of escapades on foreign soil, and that we're going to be for the working man and woman here at home in America. So how is this going to go over with Trump's base? Does he even care about his base anymore? It would seem he doesn't. But leave that up to you to talk a little bit about Trump's, what is his plan with this? Who is it popular with? It's a little bit puzzling.
Yes, well, Trump definitely made some promises on the campaign trail about things, and even since he's taken office, about things like having NATO allies bear more of the burden for the global defense of Europe and things like that. It's unclear what he meant by that. It's unclear what he thinks is necessary for national security. He certainly seems very enamored of the military. As we know, he has stocked his cabinet with more military leaders as opposed to civilian leaders than other recent presidents. And he is committed to putting more money into the military. He did say some of these things before the election as well. It's not clear to me how much his supporters registered those promises for more military spending that were made before the election. But it seems to go arm in arm for him with things like border security. As we know, we heard him say the other day that his deportation efforts are a military endeavor. So these things seem linked to him, and I think that explains part of why he's so committed to increasing military spending.
Yeah, the thing too that everybody I think was wondering is how much could go wrong, basically, is what I want to ask. But how much will his naive and dangerous ideas actually drive America's military endeavors? You can't defeat ISIS because ISIS is not a nation. It's an idea. You can't defeat ideas. It's just not possible. And every military encounter in history that's attempted to do that has failed. So what would, I can't imagine Donald Trump having, not having the mind of a strategist going forward with this. How much actual influence, he's the commander-in-chief, but how much can he do?
Well, we don't know yet what his advisors, for instance, what General Mattis will recommend for his ISIS strategy that President Trump has demanded that he put forth. We also don't know how much President Trump will listen to his advisors. So those are both enormous questions that are yet to be answered. But you're right. ISIS can't be defeated by military strength alone. And we have military leaders who recognize that. There were 120 retired admirals and generals who wrote an open letter saying that diplomacy and foreign aid were essential tools in United States international relations. And now we have the Trump administration threatening to take funding away from those things and take funding that could be used to increase stability around the world through foreign aid and instead spend it on building up our military.
It seems to Trump's efforts at diplomacy thus far have crashed and burned. Is this a substitute? Would this be a substitute for diplomacy? The horror. I hate to think that, but it seems that things moving so fast. I cannot imagine what the idea behind this is, other than him imagining himself as a Roman emperor with defeating every nation on earth. I don't get it. I really still don't.
Well, there are congressional leaders. Sort of at the top of that list are Senator John McCain and Max Thornberry, who are both leaders of armed services in Congress and who have been calling for increases to military spending for some time. So Trump has some partnership in this. This is one instance where he is actually going along with traditional Republican dogma to some extent. Of course, there is a whole other faction of Republicans, the Tea Party end of the party, who do not want to see military spending increased. And seeing those groups fight it out over this is definitely going to be part of how it all plays out.
So just coming to the end of this, I'm so grateful to you. Thank you so much for joining us today. One just final note from you on how this is going to impact domestic programs that are, well, they will indeed suffer. Where do you figure the worst of it is going to come from?
We don't know yet where the worst of it will come from, but we do know that they're targeting the arts, the National Endowment for the Arts, and the EPA. But we also know that those things don't account for nearly enough money for how much they say they're going to cut. They say they want to cut $54 billion from domestic spending. The entire EPA budget, if they did away with the EPA entirely, is only $8 billion. So the depth of the cuts they would have to make to achieve that kind of cut, it's a 10% cut to domestic spending, would be incredibly painful, and it would really be felt across the country, because, you know, states on average get 30% of their state budgets from the federal government. There's no way to cut domestic spending by 10% and not have that be felt in cities and states around the country.
Thank you so much for that, Lindsay. Really, really appreciate you coming on the show today. My guest has been Lindsay Hoshkarian. Ed Fallon also joined us today. It's been Aya Cascadia for Tuesday, February 28th, 2017. Engineering for us today, Judy Feastel. Derek Crooks is our AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts. Know your rights.